dire straits. The tourism industry has been brought to a halt, and all the tourist workers, a great many of them,
of the human rights activist Monica Lopez Baltadano in Managua speaking about the demonstrations in Nicaragua and what the protesters are demanding.
What we have been seeing for the past 45 days is the rise up of a very strong popular rebellion against the violence of Daniel Ortega's government. The rebellion has been led by youth. Youth in the universities, but also it's now become a rebellion of all Nicaraguan population. We have seen massive protests on the streets, and also important actions of protest that are happening. For instance, more than 70% of the roads in Nicaragua are blocked by population that is requesting two basic things: justice for the more than 127 people that have been murdered by Ortega's regime so far, and more than 1,000 people injured, and also the decision of Nicaraguan population that Ortega and his wife leaves power.
So that's Monica Lopez Baltadano, one of the leading protesters.
Did Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo leave power? Because Monica Baltadano says it, because there's barricades on the streets. There's a thing called democratic process. What we're looking for is a democratic process. We're looking for peaceful conditions that can lead to democratic outcomes. It's not, advocate a coup, a violent coup. In a polarized society, does not end the violence. The violence would continue. We need institutions. We need democracy now.
Why did the Ortega government open fire on the protesters? More than 100 have been killed.
They're not all.
Not all.
Is a very gross exaggeration.
What would you say? What do you say?
I say that the government has agreed that the forensic people of the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights accompany the Nicaraguan prosecutors in elucidating each and every one of those cases without gross generalizations, which one hears every day, trying to put the 10 policemen who have been killed on the account of the government, that the government burned down its own mayor's offices in various cities, that the X on the houses of the Sandinistas.
We have
which
20 seconds,
terror.
But we will do a post-show.
No,
What are you calling
absolute for? Absolute bias in the media internationally, picking up on this media war by taking the black propaganda and presenting it as fact. There's no balance. What we need is balance. What we need is the dialogue to get to a peace process which can lead to elections, and the Nicaraguan people decide, not Monica Baltadano in 71 barricades.
We'll leave it there, but continue this discussion and put it online at democracynow.org. Paul Oquist, Senior Minister for National Policy in President Daniel Ortega's government. That is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener. Thanks for joining.
Good afternoon. The time is 5:02. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
One nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline. Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
KBOO hosts beloved community and action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the radio station. June 21st, we'll show the documentary film Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock. Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock captures the story of Native-led defiance that changed the fight for clean water, the environment, and the future of our planet. Again, that's a screening of Awake for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action Movie Night on Thursday, June 21st at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The planet's been in decline since 1492, 500 years and counting, surviving the genocide they call colonizing my turtle island. What is
the KBOO?
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the U.S. immigration policy on separating children from their parents and putting them in cages continues to spark global controversy.
A Virginia school drops the name of a Confederate general for Obama's name.
And in international news, the inflated demand for palm oil is possibly causing pythons to leave the forest in search of human sustenance. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. I'm Elizabeth Venable.
And I'm Kyle Carrezzi. Students in Richmond, Virginia will no longer be attending J.E.B. Stewart Elementary School. The 90% black school body of over 400 will no longer enter a building named after a Confederate general to receive their education. On Monday night, the Richmond School Board voted 6-1 to strip Stewart's name from the building and rename the building Barack Obama Elementary School. The decision came after months of public meetings, which included input from the students themselves. Jason Kamara is the Richmond School Superintendent, and he said this about the name change, quote, "I couldn't think of a more fitting change in the arc of history to have a school named after our first African-American president," unquote. Richmond is a city of over 200,000 people and is the former capital of the Confederacy, and many of its streets are named after former generals and Confederate leaders, as well as public landmarks and statues. The city has put together a commission that is expected to give the mayor's office recommendations on what to do about its many public landmarks.
Watiba, a 50-year-old woman in Indonesia, met a grizzly in this weekend. She had been missing since going out to check her vegetable garden. It was later that villagers noticed a 23-foot reticulated python with a swollen belly outside of the village. The villagers then killed the snake and cut open its belly, revealing the body of Watiba, who had apparently been swallowed whole. Python attacks in this part of the world are rare, but there has been an uptick in documented attacks in Indonesia as of the past few years. Why the increase? Some scientists think it has to do with our apparently insatiable need for palm oil. Palm oil cultivation has been the culprit for the massive deforestation in rainforests in Borneo, and is perhaps one of the main threats against the orangutan population there. The industry is known for providing about 4% of the Earth's total global warming emissions. This clear-cutting is also apparently deriving pythons of their usual habitat and forcing them into more contact than normal with people.
The 24-hour vigil outside of the immigration processing facility in Portland that began on Sunday continued through today. Protesters said that they will remain indefinitely until the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, decides to end its zero-tolerance policy, and the city of Portland stops coordinating with ICE. A candlelight vigil and rally was held last night at the Occupy ICE PDX encampment. KBOO was there and recorded the voices of some of the people who spoke.
Right now, we have some brave people standing up here, or sitting down here rather, and also everyone who's standing up. But they came out here and they said, you need to let the 9 ICE officers go home to their families. They are trapped inside. They cannot get home to their families. So we pose the question to them, what about the families they are holding inside? So we have stood here. We have people who are willing to go to jail for this. Why should they go home to their families if the children can't go home to theirs? We are going to be here every day. We are going to be here every night. And this is going to be a regular occurrence in Portland. If you're not part of it, you're going to have to get used to it because it's not going away. This will not stop.
not stopping. We will not stand for this kind of behavior. We are going to take responsibility for our country. We're not going to wait for politicians. We're not going to wait for so-called leaders. We are the proletariat. Don't forget that. When we rise, it will be with the people, not from the people. And we will rise together. And we will bring everyone with us who wants this life. If you believe in freedom, liberty, and justice, and you aren't out here, then you're lying to yourself. Because this America that they have taught you through years and years of conditioning in school, the lie that they teach you, it's not true. The United States is the single most, it's the single greatest defender of human rights around the planet. Everything that you enjoy, from your cell phones to your cars to the food that you eat, comes from violence inflicted by this country on others. We steal corn by paying higher prices for it while the people in those countries starve. We steal minerals because we pay higher prices for it while the peoples in those countries starve, controlled by strongmen. This is the kind of government that you belong to. It doesn't mean you shouldn't participate in it. It means you should take it the f*** over.
We're going to keep camping here. It's basically, we're going to be doing a camp and a vigil every night, either until Trump lifts his policy or until they stop separating families. So right now, yeah, we're just here to show support.
The end goal is that this kind of place is shut down. If you can see, this is a place in a pretty good neighborhood. I assure you the people around here don't even know that this place exists, unless you're aware. And so for me, that's one of the goals, that people are aware of what's going on. I'll give you an example. For the new detention centers where they're keeping kids,
in cages.
People think that that's something new, but that's really not. It's really not. In Portland, there are different shelters that house these kids that but people don't really know. We have them in Portland where they keep minors incarcerated. So we want people to be aware of this, and we want people to make sure that they show up.
Mm-hmm. And is there an increase under the Trump administration?
Definitely. The separation of families and the arrest have been going on for a long time, but definitely the numbers have increased dramatically under Trump. I know a lot of people out there are feeling all kinds of ways about the separation of families, but I don't see them here. So if you're one of them that feel that this is not okay and that we should put an end into this separation of families, then come down. We are in the ICE Detention Center by the South Waterfront Park. Show up. Call your representatives. Also hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. We need that. We need that because we can't really continue like this anymore. When we were trying to make sure President Obama introduced something quite like DACA, all of us were getting arrested. All of us undocumented folks were outside in the streets and demanding dignity. Personally, it got to a point that I'm super tired of always being the one demanding dignity. And what makes me hopeful is to see this, to see people around that are willing to put their freedom on the line, that are here to take a stand. That makes me hopeful. And I think that's very important for people to know, because sometimes people think that what they're doing might not matter. But it does, because if you look around, if I am an undocumented person looking around what's around me, I feel supported and I know that I'm no longer alone. And I'm not in this by myself. So it really matters that people show up, that people make phone calls, that people donate. It makes a difference.
The protesters say they plan to keep up the vigil as long as it takes, until ICE leaves Portland and stops the zero-tolerance policy. The building leased by ICE is located at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland. There will be another rally and vigil this evening at 8:30 p.m., and supporters are taking volunteer shifts to maintain a 24-hour presence at the site. More information and video can be found on KB Radio's Facebook page.
This next piece contains sensitive content regarding children separated from their parents at ICE detention centers. A collaboration between ProPublica and Vox was able to retrieve audio from inside a Texas detention facility. In the audio excerpt we are about to play, you can hear ICE agents joking about the group of children screaming for their parents by saying, quote, "We have an orchestra here. The only thing missing is the conductor," end quote. In between cries, Spanish-speaking consulates communicate with the children about where they are from and talk to them about getting food. One child mentions in Spanish that she is from Honduras. Others mention Guatemala. Throughout the consulate's communication with the children, listeners can hear the voice of a very young child perpetually calling for, quote, daddy. Another child refuses to eat until her aunt is called. We go now to the excerpt.
Quiero que lo pare mi papá, no quiero que lo deporte.
No, no. Bueno, aquí tenemos una orquesta.
No me quiero separar de mi padre.
¿De dónde son ustedes?
De Salvador.
¿Y tú?
Guatemala.
No llores. Vas a llegar con... Mira, ella te va a explicar y te va a ayudar. ¿Cierto, consul?
¿Te va a pasar con su consulado?
El papá. Papá.
Yo te...
Con mi tía, por lo menos, para que después llegue mi mami.
¿Me puedes abrir la... Alguien me cerró la puerta de...
Tengo que me venga a traer mi tía para llevarme la
casa. Ella llama a tu tía si tú tienes el número y habla con tu tía.
Tengo el número de ella.
Ah, pues ahorita ella te ayuda para que hable. Ya hablaste nada más.
No, papá.
Voy por aquí, niña.
Papá.
Cuando saquen la comida, ¿verdad?
Ay, no, sí. Papá.
Cuando saquen la comida, ya voy a llegar yo cuando esté allá.
Ya le voy a meter a comer.
Ay, papá, papá.
Si tiene una sal de melada, por favor.
No,
voy a
tener. Ay, no, papá.
Porque van a sentir. Si te quieres juntar con ella, te junta aquí, porque voy a tener.
Ay, no, papá.
O me la pone allá mejor. Allá la orillita.
Ay, no, papá.
Me llama. No, voy a tener que ser aquí, porque voy a meter Jenny y se vaya a
ir. Ay, no, papá.
¿Cómo se puede traer?
No, papá.
Porque está pasando
y
pasando.
No, papá.
Porque
no, papá.
Como
no, papá.
Me dijeron que...
Ay, no, papá.
El otro grupo es mujer.
Ay, no, papá.
No. No. Es para... No,
ay, papá.
Por eso no puedo tener nada. Okay. Porque luego viene ICE y ICE...
God bless the USA. John Sandweg, who served as head of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement... Sorry. John Sandweg, who served as head of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement from 2014 to 2014, has said migrant parents separated from their children at the border are sometimes unable to relocate their children and remain permanently separated. Sandweg's statement is in direct contradiction with the White House, which has said that the separation is only temporary. Mercedes Schlapp, the White House Director of Strategic Communications, stated Tuesday on Fox News that the separation of families is for a limited time between 5 to 10 days. However, given the fact that the deportation of adults is given a much higher priority than that of children, many of which will not have their case for asylum heard by a judge for up to several years, resulting in a parent being deported without the child. These migrant children are then fed into the foster system and may eventually become wards of the state and adopted. The parents then could find themselves in their countries of origin, where their safety may be at stake, and no access to legal counsel and no understanding of the U.S. immigration and justice systems. Sandwick has said he has seen this type of permanent separation happen, and it is why, under the Obama administration, family unity was critical, and there was concern about children being left behind. Already, many parents who have been deported are having difficulty locating their children. Parents are given a paper after they have been detained, which explains that if they have been charged with a crime and will be separated from their children while they wait for a court hearing. Also in the paper is a 1-800 number they are told to call for assistance in finding their children. The number connects them to a recorded message that connects the caller with the case manager regarding the child. However, the case managers oftentimes cannot locate the children in question.
U.S. relations with the U.N. seem to be deteriorating further. According to Reuters, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley are planning to announce the United States' withdrawal from the UN Human Resource Council. Currently, the U.S. is in a year and a half into a three-year term to the council, but has threatened to quit if reforms aren't made. The U.S. accuses the 47-member council of being anti-Israel. Diplomats and activists have attempted to negotiate with the U.S., but those discussions have failed. The demands put forth by the U.S. weren't met, and it seems that the Trump administration may finally withdraw from the U.S. from further participation in the council. This would constitute the third major backtrack by the U.N. by the U.S., who have already left the Paris Agreement and the Iran nuclear deal under Trump. The U.S.'s rumored decision to leave the Human Rights Council comes in the midst of major criticism surrounding the detainment of children separated from their parents while trying to enter the U.S. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein has demanded that the Trump administration stop its, quote, unconscionable policy. President George W. Bush rejected a term on the council in 2006, but President Obama's administration was elected and accepted membership to the council. 1 year ago, Ambassador Haley stated that the Trump administration would review its membership on the council, demanding that the UN eliminates its, quote, chronic anti-Israeli bias, end quote. The council has a permanent item on the agenda concerning suspected human rights violations by Israel against Palestine in occupied territories, which the Trump administration wants removed from the agenda. Human Rights Watch Executive Director Ken Roth states that, quote, the UN Human Rights Council has played an important role in such countries as North Korea, Syria, Myanmar, and South Sudan, but all Trump seems to care about is defending Israel, end quote. Last month, during a vote on whether to investigate excessive force by Israeli officers after multiple killings in Gaza, the U.S. and Australia were the only countries to vote no. In response to the vote, the Israeli ambassador to the UN accused the council of, quote, spreading lies against Israel, end quote. No official announcement has been made by the U.S. concerning its status on the council.
Last Saturday, Debbie Africa was released from prison after 40 years. She is one of the nine members of the MOVE organization convicted of the killing of Philadelphia police officer James Ramp during a police assault on the MOVE house in May of 1985 involving more than 500 officers. The MOVE members barricaded themselves in the basement of the house while police fired more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition before Police Commissioner Gregor Sambor gave orders to bomb the house. The resulting fire took the lives of six adults and five children aged from 7 to 13 and left more than 250 people homeless. Eyewitness accounts say that Officer Ramp was shot in the back of the neck by friendly fire and not by a MOVE member. Saturday, Debbie became the first of the MOVE 9 to be paroled and was reunited with her son Mike, who was born in jail and taken away 3 days later. All the living members of the MOVE 9 were eligible for parole in 2008, however, all have been denied until Debbie's release. Janet and Janine Africa appeared before the parole board on the same day but were denied. Brad Thompson, one of the attorneys representing the MOVE 9, said that the denial of Janet and Janine was hard to grasp, as the cases were very similar and neither had any disciplinary infraction in decades.
On May 18th of this year, KBU reported on the shooting death of Car Prowl suspect Dimitri Bullard by Gresham Police. Today, a grand jury has ruled the shootings by officers Joshua Price and Brendan Hayes was justified. The officers had responded to a call of a suspected car prowler late in the evening of May 17th. They spotted the suspect, who fled in the dark in a dark-colored SUV. Although they did not give chase, they found the SUV shortly thereafter, crashed on Southwest Pleasant View Drive. According to the police reports, the two officers approached the car when Bullard charged them with a hatchet. The officers opened fire from 20 feet away, killing him.
Yesterday, Portland police arrested a man who they suspect of shooting up the TikTok restaurant on Southeast Division on June 11th. Joshua Flores, 32, is being charged with attempted murder and assault after he entered the establishment and began shooting. Police believe patron Justin Ray Marshall, who was the intended target of the attack, though no information was released as to the relationship between the two men. The shooting left the restaurant riddled with bullet holes, however, there were no injuries.
The Portland Water Bureau has issued a news release saying that as of tomorrow, June 20th, they will begin using groundwater from wells in the Columbia South Shore well field to augment water coming from the Bull Run watershed to ensure adequate supply for Portland's water needs throughout the summer. The release states that due to the dry spring weather, the above average temperatures, along with long-term weather forecasts, the Bureau will be using the well fields to supplement supply until the return of heavy fall rains. The Columbia South Shore well field is a high-quality water supply that meets or surpasses all federal and state drinking water regulations.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. According to the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Native Americans continue to be one of the most underrepresented groups in the Census of Agriculture. Utah Public Radio's Bronson Tigert reports.
The Census of Agriculture provides comprehensive and impartial agricultural data for every county in the nation. According to the USDA, producers can show the nation the value and importance of agriculture and make better decisions for their own operations. Zach Duchenaw with the Intertribal Agriculture Council says there is a reason why some Native Americans are reluctant to share their information.
When you're considering the relationship that the Native American producers have had with the United States government over the last 200 years, there are some well-reasoned historical arguments for not letting them know exactly what you're doing.
Zach says the USDA is doing better at rebuilding trust and working with Native American producers. The information can help improve the economic and social status in these communities.
You have a right to privacy. You have a right to your own business as you farm or ranch or do whatever you're doing. But when you take that check from the government to help you in your ag endeavor, you have an obligation to provide them the information they need to provide a more enlightened approach to that public policy.
The 2012 census data, which shows that 56,092 farms and ranches operated by 71,947 Native Americans, sold a total of $3.24 billion in agricultural products. The average size of a farm or ranch operated by Native Americans is 100% larger than the national farm size average. Zach says Native American farmers and ranchers are producing more than what the statistics show.
The important thing is the bigger your portion of the ag economy, the more suited public policy should be to address your concerns and your needs.
For example, in 2009, a harsh winter in North and South Dakota hit Native producers hard. Zach and other leaders were able to convince the USDA for special assistance, but with limited data, they didn't get what they needed.
If we don't have accurate numbers to prove where we're at and what we're doing, it's going to be hard to craft that public ag policy to fit our community.
That's Bronson Tigert reporting. A motion was filed last week in a Native American voting case in Utah. Plaintiffs allege little has been done in San Juan County to assist Navajo voters under December 2017 federal court-ordered redistricting plans. Attorneys are asking for the temporary reopening of the case to argue the county is violating the order. Plaintiffs say the county failed to properly assign up to 2,000 Navajo voters to precincts. San Juan County officials have tried to halt redistricting. The Salt Lake City Tribune reports County Commissioner Phil Lyman called the new motion baseless. The motion comes as voters prepare for Utah's primary election next week. Electricity has been restored to two Manitoba First Nations communities. The CBC reports crews repair transmission lines, poles, and power Monday, but residents are still in hotels away from the community after being evacuated in May due to wildfires. Hundreds of people were airlifted out of the Little Grand Rapids and Pingossie reserves northeast of Winnipeg. Canadian government officials are expected to meet with First Nations leaders this week to discuss plans for people to return home. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs will examine subsistence issues. The oversight hearing, Keep What You Catch, Promoting Traditional Subsistence Activities in Native Communities, is scheduled for Wednesday in Washington, D.C. Hunting and fishing rights are among key tribal issues. The hearing comes after Washington state tribes claimed a victory for salmon in a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
I have John.
Everything is free now, that's what they say. Everything I ever done, gonna give it away. Someone hit the big score, figured it out. They were gonna do it anyway, even if it doesn't pay.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report with Tom Flynn speaking about the Spear Point Publications book launch to specialized in elder authors on June 24th. At 6, it's Queer Talk Radio, followed by Calculated Conversations at 7. Tonight's weather, we will see it cool down to 64 degrees overnight. Then tomorrow, the heat continues with a high of 91 degrees. East of the Cascades, we'll see similar temperatures. Today in history, in 1965, the last remaining slaves in the United States were emancipated in Texas when General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston with the news. It had been almost 2.5 years since Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation. It is now a holiday known as Juneteenth or Freedom Day. The quote of the day is from Harriet Tubman, abolitionist and humanitarian, who said, I had reasoned this out in my mind. There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other. For no man should take me alive. I should fight for my liberty as long as my strength lasted. And when the time came for me to go, the Lord would let them take me.
On June 10th, Will Nguyen was arrested during a protest in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. According to ABC News, at least one U.S. diplomat has been granted access to Nguyen since his arrest. Nguyen has just finished his master's degree program in public policy at the University of Singapore before traveling to Vietnam on vacation. The protest concerned proposed land concessions in Vietnam for development by Chinese investors. Nguyen was tweeting when his sister Victoria referred to it as a, quote, play-by-play of the protests until all of a sudden his tweets stopped coming. A video then surfaced on social media showing several men in plain clothes dragging Nguyen through the street and putting him into a police vehicle. Nguyen can be seen bleeding from a head wound as he was dragged, though the origin of the wound remains unclear. After his arrest, Nguyen's Airbnb host contacted his family to inform them that police had searched the apartment and had taken his credit cards, U.S. passport, and personal laptop. The State Department remains, quote, deeply concerned about Nguyen's injury, and consular officials are in communication with the Vietnamese government concerning Nguyen's arrest. The State Department continued, quote, his safety and the safety of all U.S. citizens is the most utmost concern to the United States. The Vietnamese government permitted consular access to Mr. Nguyen on June 15th. We will continue to push for continued and regular access by consular officers to Mr. Nguyen in the interest of ensuring due process and fair treatment, unquote. Nguyen and his sister Victoria were raised in the U.S. after their family left Vietnam to escape the Vietnam War. Victoria stated that, quote, it's not illegal to protest in Vietnam. Everybody can protest, but it's the retribution that everybody is fearful of. The Vietnam embassy, based in the U.S., did not make itself available to comment on the arrest despite multiple calls and emails from ABC News. Victoria is now in contact with the State Department, as well as multiple members of Congress, in an effort to have her brother released from custody in Vietnam.
The Advocate recently reported that over 150 members of a far-right group attempted to block the route of Kiev Pride on Sunday morning. Their plan was not successful. Ukrainian police in riot gear removed protesters from the street before the LGBTQ event began. Reuters reported 56 demonstrators were detained. Kiev police issued a statement saying that several men had thrown gas canisters at law enforcement, and that several men who resisted arrest and used the gas canisters against officers were detained. C-14 was the alt-right group behind the counter-protest action. The group claimed its group was attacked by police with tear gas and batons first. Kiev's Pride parade proceeded without incident. Police presence at Kiev Pride has increased with violent attacks from anti-LGBTQ protesters stemming from 2015. Since that year, Kiev's Pride celebrations have been primarily peaceful and without interruption.
Pastors for Peace is sponsoring the Caravan to Cuba. The Caravan to Cuba is a remarkable tour that gives talks about the relief and educational possibilities in different cities on its way to bring aid to Cuba. KBOO's Ellis Ellis Marchand spoke with Caravan to Cuba program director John Waller to find out more.
I have John Waller, the program coordinator for the Caravan to Cuba, on the line. John, thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy day to talk to our listeners here on KBOO.
I'm glad to have the opportunity. Thank you.
So let's dive right in. Why don't you tell us why you and your organization decided to host this upcoming event that we'll get to in a minute?
Okay. Well, we've been doing this ever since 1992. Our caravan takes people and humanitarian aid to Cuba, and it does it without asking the U.S. government for a license, because U.S. citizens are free to travel anywhere else in the world, including, for instance, Iran and North Korea. But to go to Cuba, you have to have a license from the government. That has gone through many stages. Under Bill Clinton, licenses were introduced. Under George Bush, they were taken away. Under Obama, they were introduced and expanded. Under Trump, they've been reduced, but they still exist. But we say, on principle, we should be able to go and visit and help our brothers and sisters in Cuba without a license. So this is a challenge in the spirit of the U.S. civil rights movement. When you see an unjust law, a law that either in your faith or in your morality you feel is unjust, you challenge it by breaking it. It's a civil offense. We do this through a caravan of routes which visit many cities where we talk about what we're doing, we raise public awareness, we raise money, we lobby elected officials, and then a bit later we go on to the actual trip to Cuba. And so Portland is one of amongst 40 cities we'll be visiting at the end of June.
Wow. Are you ever afraid that people will intervene in what you're doing?
Well, we're not afraid. I mean, in the very early years, in the 90s, at the border, and then we were usually crossing into Mexico on our way to Cuba, the U.S. government would intervene to try and stop the aid being taken. And in those early years, there were standoffs at the border. Twice there were hunger strikes in protest at aid being seized. And those hunger strikes continued until the aid was released and could go into Cuba. So we've had our share of confrontations in the early years. More recently, no. Although under Bush, it wasn't physical confrontation, but it was later on written threats against the caravanistas, as you call them. Threatening fines for what we did, although in the end, once again, the government backed off.
Do you think
under Trump, we don't know what will happen?
Do you think it's because you're delivering aid? Are there certain protections for those who are delivering aid to another country or village or nationality?
Well, in general, the idea of taking humanitarian aid is something that most governments, and certainly the U.S. government, ought to respect. And they didn't respect that. On the very first caravan, there was a situation where actual pastors and priests were caught on camera being dragged to the ground by U.S. Customs for trying to take medicines and Bibles to Cuba. And it wasn't because of the aid. It was because we were defying the government and saying, we want to see normal relations between the U.S. and Cuba. And that's what the U.S. government, including this current government, does not want to see.
Tell us about the event coming up in Portland where you'll be speaking about all of your adventures.
Okay. So this is the second on my route. I start in Seattle and end up in Los Angeles. It's on Sunday the 24th at 5 p.m. I'm speaking at the Sunnyside Community House, which is 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. I will be speaking. I'm also showing a movie called Dare to Dream, which is about a program that we administer whereby U.S. medical students can study to be, U.S. students can study to be doctors for free at the Latin American Medical School in Havana, a medical school that trains young people of poor origins economically from all over the world. And this is a special arrangement. We have 10 students a year who can go from the U.S. to study there.
That's phenomenal. How did they decide who gets to go into that program?
Well, we are the administering organization in the U.S. So people apply to us, and they can apply online through our website with clear selection criteria. Then we interview and we decide the 10. Every country, and it's 85 countries, send students to the school. Every country has its own procedures for selecting. Cuba then receives the students and trains them for 6 years to be doctors. So this is an example of how collaboration between the U.S. and Cuba, although it would benefit Cuba immensely economically, there are also potential gains for the United States as well. This is a win-win.
It is a win-win. How long has this particular program been going on?
Since 2001.
Wow. So I was curious to know if in your circle of networking, if you hear about other programs, other organizations working to enhance relationships like this between the U.S. and other countries?
I can't say offhand I do. I mean, this is a unique medical school. Mm-hmm. And the offer is extended to most of the countries for free. Mm-hmm. And Cuba also has trained people in other fields. It trains people in literacy teaching, for instance. It's because Cuban sports is quite famous. It trains young people in certain sporting activities. I'm sure there must be a few examples around the world of something similar, but I don't personally know of it. This is a pretty remarkable offer.
I think so. I agree as well. Well, as we're wrapping up, would you like to tell our audience one more time about the location, the time of your talk this weekend, and the movie?
Okay. It's Sunday 24th at 5 p.m. at Sunnyside Community House, which is 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street. I'll be speaking, but the movie is called Dare to Dream, and it's a 30-minute movie about the U.S. students at the Latin American Medical School in Havana.
Okay. I've been talking with John Waller, the program coordinator for the Caravan to Cuba. And John, thank you again so much for sharing all the really remarkable things that are happening through your organization. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for giving me the time to do that.
If you're looking to stay sharp against an increasingly aggressive empire, test your wits with this week's point puzzle.
We're at the National Association.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked for 4 one-syllable words that all start with the same letter. Each of them is a homophone for a letter of the alphabet. Take these 4 letters, plus the letter that the words start with, and you will have a common category of 5 things. I said that one of the words is a foreign word commonly used in English, and one is an exclamation or interjection. Well, the answer, of course, is the 5 vowels. The letter E begins the words A, E-H, I, E-Y-E, O, E-A-U, and U, E-W-E. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon. For the new puzzle, take a girl's name in 5 letters, starting with a consonant and then a vowel. Move the first letter forward 1 consonant in the alphabet, and the second forward 1 vowel, and you will have another common girl's name. Do this again, and you will have a third common girl's name. To see this in writing, visit the Point Puzzle page of the KPOV website. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica by my side. A little bit of Rita is all I need. A little bit of Tina is what I see. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of June 18th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV High Desert Community Radio.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Al Khan, CJ Fritz, Doug McVeigh, Jenka Sodenberg, and Elizabeth Venable. The producer, our engineer, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zella Sellis-Marchand. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Elizabeth Venable.
And I'm Kyle Carezzi, and coming up tomorrow on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday Talk Radio, Paul Rowland talks to members of Portland's Gray Panthers about their fight for social justice. At 9, it's Making Contact, and they examine criminalization of black girls, their intricate lives being highly judged by teachers, administrators, and the justice system. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, The Food Show reports on the threats posed by Big Dairy in Oregon. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. To keep informed and to get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Spearpoint Publications is a unique book publisher that accepts publications from many authors in the creative writing genres, but focuses on writers who are involved in senior writing groups. Joining us live in the studio is Howard Schneider and Mazetta Moon at Spearpoint. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So talk more about the event for us.
Well, this is a launch party that will be held Sunday, June 24th at 5:30. And we usually run up to around 8, but there's no reason to close up if we're still having a good time. Mm-hmm. It'll be at the Hollywood Senior Center, which is at 1820 Northeast 40th Avenue in the heart of Hollywood. We'd love to have you join us for an evening of fun. We do readings from our new book, Survival, which is a collection of short stories by myself and Mazetta Moon. This is the sixth book that Spearpoint Publications has come out with. Mm-hmm. There will be a lot of food, really good food, a lot of beverages, big assortment of wines and beers, if I can say that, as well as really outstanding musical talent. We have four musician groups or musicians that'll be performing.
All right, perfect. What are some other books that are published at Spearpoint?
The first book we came out with was Snapshots, one that Mazetta and I wrote, which is a collection of short stories based primarily on flash writing, mm-hmm. which is what we do in our writing groups. Then we published Monkey Casserole and Word Storms and our latest book, Survival, which are all collections of short stories. Then we also published a novel that Mazzetta wrote some number of years ago called Embracing Evil. It's a novel that's set here in Portland, and it involves a serial killer story, but I will let you read it mm-hmm. to find out what it's really all about. And then we also published a collection of three novellas by Mazzetta that are on quite different subjects, but all really, really good stories.
Mm-hmm.
The only other book we've published is for an independent author that is neither one of us, Pat Morgan. It's a story of her times in Central America called Seeds of Change.
Mm-hmm. And why did you pick the Hollywood Senior Center for the location for the book launch?
Well, first of all, that's where Mazzetta and I met at the Writers Unite Flash Writing Group at the Senior Center. But the center has been extremely supportive of our efforts and donates the space for our parties, which this will be number four of over the past 3 years.
And do you teach any classes on writing? Anything for the community?
No, we do not. We participate in some. Mm-hmm. Mazzetta is the leader of the Gresham Senior Center Writing Group, and I'm sort of a co-director of the writing group at the Hollywood Center. And we certainly have room for more participants in either one of those groups.
Mm-hmm. And for Spearpoint Publications, they specialize in publishing books from elderly people?
Well, primarily, yes, that's true. We open ourselves to anybody that wants to explore self-publication. The reason we do what we do with seniors is that they often don't have a path to publication.
Mm-hmm.
So being seniors ourselves, it's become our focus.
And what motivated both of you to start the company?
Well, we hit it off right away. We've got tired of chasing our tail, so to speak, trying to get other people to publish our work and being rejected. So we thought, hey, we think of ourselves as pretty good writers. Let's see what we can do. And so far, we've had good reception from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like you're feeling a need for the city.
Yeah, and seniors often feel marginalized by their inability, unwillingness to participate, or their fear of the technology that's out there today. So Howard and I feel like there's thousands of voices out there. They want to be heard. They have a story to tell. So there are people that are seniors that have diminished mental capacities, and they really aren't with it anymore. But a lot of seniors are very sharp. They're on fire mentally. They have great imaginations and good life stories to tell. So that's our goal, is to help them find a way to get it out there.
And what is the publishing process? If someone wanted to be published with you guys, how would they get in touch with you? What would be the process for that?
Well, our website, spearpointpub.com, provides information about our services and how to contact us. The problem we have right now is that there's only two of us. We don't have a big staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only accept limited participation from other people. So at this point, we try to screen who really is ready to publish and who really does know how to write. And that's not trying to be elitist. It's just simply the fact that we don't have the ability to teach people at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we'd like to have a staff and take on hundreds of people if they're out there, you know.
And what is the publishing business like in public? Like, how is the scene, and how does it compare to other cities besides Portland?
Well, our impression of Portland is that it's just filled with creative people, whether it's musicians or artists, certainly writers. There are so many writing groups, and we feel that there's a real opportunity for a small publishing organization like ours that can basically help people that don't have the facility to do it on their own. And the point is that we need to reach those people, and we feel we can do it through parties like the one we're going to have, where we have really good attendance. Everybody mm-hmm. has a good time, and they want to come back to the next year's party, and also through our website. Even a rodeo program like this is extremely helpful to us. So we really are working at ways to get the word out.
And what is the physical resources you use to publish the books?
Well, at this point, If it's an ebook, we use a company called BookBaby.
Mm-hmm.
Once a person has their manuscript into a document, usually on a flash drive or some type of electronic format, we can format it for them for publication. We have a friend who runs Zap Graphics, and he can create a cover for them. So then once it's formatted and there's a cover available, we can help them create their own account with BookBaby and or have it go through us. The other side of it is that when you go to print a book, we use a company called Lulu, which we send in the manuscript and they print it for us and send us the books.
Mm-hmm. And have either of you guys done any writing before Spearpoint or any sort of publishing experience like that?
I've been writing pretty much all my life.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I wrote songs for a rock band for 20 years and then transitioned into short story writing.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to wrap up soon, but tell us about the event. When is it specifically? June 24th?
Yes, Sunday, June 24th at 5:30 at the Senior Center, the heart of Hollywood.
All right, perfect. And is there anything you want to add?
Come on down.
All right, excellent. All right, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. The time is 5:55. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And up next is This Way Out.
KBOO Community Radio cordially invites you to the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. It's here at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Join us for the open house and an evening of on-air programming hosted by Barbara Bernstein and featuring Carol Major, Victoria Stapiello, and Maureen Key. We're celebrating the contribution of women volunteers, DJs, on-air hosts, staff, and board members in making KBOO what it is today. Light snacks and drinks will be provided. Everyone is welcome. Again, that's the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House. It's on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of SEMA, Sacred Dance of the Whirling Dervishes, Sunday, June 24th at 3:30 p.m. at the New Expressive Works in Portland. The SEMA ceremony will be presented by the Mev Levi Order of America to honor the mystical poet Jalaluddin Rumi. The mystical journey toward perfection is symbolized in this ceremony of whirling prayer directed by the Posnishan Jalaluddin Loras. The musical ensemble will feature the Nay, Odd, and Kudum, as well as vocals. Again, that's SEMA, Sacred Dance of the Whirling Dervishes, Sunday, June 24th at 3:30 p.m. at the New Expressive Works, 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
The decision is deeply disappointing for our clients, Dave and Charlie, as well as Charlie's mother, Debbie, who was with them there that day and hoped to help her son select his wedding cake. But let's be clear, this was not the win the bakery had asked for, or the Trump administration, which had backed the bakery in the case.
They say, look, it's true that clergy have a constitutional right, based on free exercise of religion, to make distinctions among people's marriages. They can say, we're going to marry you and we're not going to marry you. But businesses do not have the right to put signs in their window that say, no Muslims, no gay people, etc.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Bermuda rebounds for marriage equality, Scotland's parliament pardons anti-gay sex law convicts, and what's really baked into the U.S. Supreme Court's wedding cake ruling. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 9th, 2018. We reported in last week's NewsWrap on the law in Bermuda taking effect that replaced marriage equality with domestic partnerships. So naturally, 2 days after that newscast was distributed, the same court that had ruled for marriage equality in May 2017 overturned the domestic partnership replacement law and restored marriage equality to the island nation. Supreme Court Chief Justice Ian Kawali announced the ruling on June 6th, saying that the sections of the measure that revoked the right of same-gender couples to marry violated the British Overseas Territories Constitution, which guarantees the right to freedom of conscience and creed. The public gallery erupted in wild applause as the decision was being announced. Kawali wrote that persons who passionately believe that same-sex marriages should not take place for religious or cultural reasons are entitled to have those beliefs respected and protected by law, but in return for the law protecting their own beliefs, he said, they cannot require the law to deprive persons who believe in same-sex marriage of respect and legal protection for their opposing beliefs. Because the court said nothing about the domestic partnership provisions of the law, the ruling now gives same-gender couples the option of marriage or domestic partnerships.
However, the court stayed its ruling for 6 weeks to allow the government to appeal, as it's expected to do. Veteran gay journalist Rex Walkner says that such a challenge would be heard by the Court of Appeal, which meets only 4 times a year and is composed of 3 foreign judges. After that, one final appeal could be filed with the UK Privy Council. Cruise ship giant Carnival was forced to scuttle weddings at sea for same-gender couples that it had been promoting when lawmakers revoked marriage equality late last year. The company, whose subsidiaries include Cunard